coming up on Broadway Radios. This week on Broadway, we talk about our Tony predictions for next week. See if your predictions match up with ours. Please stay tuned for more.
Here's how it starts, and here's how it ends. Two different hearts, maybe lovers or friends. No one knows the ways the long road bends. Once every day, your life starts again. No one can say just how or just when. Somehow the world turns inside out and then.
I always belonged in the city that moves me with people who thrill me. The marriage, the mortgage, I left them behind.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radios. This week on Broadway for June 1st, 2014. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning we have Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books, his most recent being Strippers, Showgirls, and Sharks. His columns appear at MTI, Kritzerland, Masterworks, Broadway, and many other places. Hello, Peter.
Good morning.
Hello. Michael Portantier is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a photographer whose work can be seen at followspotphoto.com as well as many of the places on the internet. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So we were planning on talking all Tony Award predictions this morning, but yesterday came a really quick story that would shock the theater community that this stadium version of Jesus Christ Superstar that was going to play most of America's stadiums was suddenly canceled. They were supposed to start in just a couple of days, I think on June 9th, so 8 days from now or nine days from yesterday. So... Michael, why don't you know, what's your take on this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's always disconcerting to me when the statement, quote unquote, that's released says absolutely nothing. The official statement gave literally no reason. It just said that it was canceled. So, you know, then that just leads to speculation that it probably had to be poor ticket sales, because what other reason would it be? I mean, unless it's some kind of financial problems within the company that's producing it, over and above ticket sales. But it's, you know, it's really sad. This is the second time I can think of that this has happened recently. The other one wasn't quite so large a scale, but the incredibly abrupt cancellation of the off-Broadway engagement of the Janis Joplin musical. So it's obviously very traumatic for people who, all of these people who thought they had jobs and now don't. This was to have been a 50-city tour. You know, I'm not sure how long it was, a year or some more. I don't know. Suddenly no work and, It's just obviously very sad.
Peter, what do you think?
I guess this property has just outlived its usefulness for a lot of people. The Broadway revivals that we've seen have not done well. And when you think of it, if they can't fill a 1,200-seat theater or 1,800-seat theater, whatever it is, you know, how can they go to arenas? Jesus had excellent staying power as a historical figure and a religious icon. But I think people have just heard this music just one time too many. And so going this grandiose scale for an arena for a show that is, after all, more than 40 years old, just may be economically crazy, not just unviable, but crazy. So it doesn't really shock me that this has happened. I was more surprised when it was announced. So,
well, but on the other hand, I absolutely see what you're saying. But for example, it was to only have played one night at Madison Square Garden. And I guess the argument is that it's got all these rock stars in it, so it would draw a different audience, and that there would be presumably enough people who would want to see it one night in each theater. But I guess maybe not. Or, I mean, and again, we're assuming that's the problem, and I don't know what the other option would be.
Oh, really? What else could it be?
Yeah.
Well, so, okay. So the New York Times this morning had an article on it, and they, excuse me, quoted Michael Cole, who I'm going to say
Spider-Man
Michael
fame.
Cole of Spider-Man, Michael Cole of A Night with Janis Joplin, and now Michael Cole of Jesus Christ Superstar Arena Tour. Wow. And Michael Cole says in a quote to the New York Times that that the total costs were in the range of eight figures, and the tour would take would need to take in $700,000 each night to keep afloat. The cast, this is just information that was the cast would it would need $700,000 to keep afloat. That's the end of his quote. The Times reports that the cast featured an eclectic mix of rock and pop performers, including the Incubus lead singer Brandon Boyd as Judas, Michelle Williams of Destiny's Child as Mary Magdalene, J.C. Chase of NSYNC as Pontius Pilate, and Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols as King Herod. So they were going the this whole they were going this whole route of you know
rock
celebrity rock star to sell it as. But you know what is the bottom line? So so he said there. Cole says to the Times, I'm going to read the quote. It became obvious that the shows were in trouble, but we tried until the last minute moment to give it every chance to turn around. In the end, it just didn't make any business sense to continue, and we didn't want the cast to endure playing to disappointing audiences. They didn't want the cast to endure that. So obviously, it you know, they haven't said it was ticket sales, but they sort of said right there it was ticket sales.
Sure.
That, and
oh, see, I hadn't read that recent one.
And the actors who were doing this said that they felt like there was very, very little promotion, although Cole says that there was millions of dollars of promotion spent. So I guess this is all going to shake out, but what does it mean for the Spider-Man tour? You know, is Actors Equity going to let him produce a Spider-Man tour?
Was it supposed to tour, or was it supposed to go to Vegas first?
It was supposed to go to Vegas, but it's also supposed to tour big cities and arenas, just like this thing was supposed to do. And I might
Has anybody heard a moment's mention of this Spider-Man tour since the show closed?
No.
Since the press they had a press release a few months ago. And that's all I heard. It was a blip, and then that's all I heard of it. But I have to say that Jesus Christ Superstar arena tours such as this play all over Europe and Australia with a tremendous success.
Well, this one was based on one that just played.
They were bringing the entire ensemble in from London,
right,
to do this. So I don't know. So we just have to see what's going to shake out here. But it's certainly obviously this thing is dead. But I really wonder about what's going to happen with Spider-Man, or if Mr. Cole is going to be welcomed back to Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
Three strikes, sort of.
If he can raise the money for whatever he wants to do, he'll be welcomed back, certainly. So, but will he be able to do that? That's the question.
But the thing is that, you know, Actors Equity can really throw a block there. Actors Equity could just say no, and you can't do a show without Actors Equity.
Well, I mean,
you can on tour.
Yes,
yeah, I was going to say, I believe it's different. You know, on Broadway, you have to have a bond. You have to have like a certain amount of money in the bank in order to pay people for, you know, for the 2 weeks after the closing and all these restrictions. But I don't know if there are any of those things are in place for a tour.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's just the Broadway contract is just a certain contract. But whether you're doing, a Lord contract in some League of Resident, Lord stands for League of Residence Theaters, or if you're going to do, you know, a special Actors Equity special contract or something like that, you have to put the 2 week bond up no matter what you're doing.
Well, then he may have done everything. They may have done everything by the letter, and so he may not have done anything actually illegal. But I think, you know, your point and Peter's point is that that in reputation terms,
yeah,
obviously.
However, I have to say, you'll tell me if I'm right about this, James, but given the fact that so many cities now have non-equity tours, Is it just a matter of time before that city called New York has non-equity?
Well, I think there is a lot of non-equity.
I'm talking about Broadway, though.
No, I don't think so. I think it'd be really, really hard to do because the other unions involved, the stagehands, the AFM, the it's the musicians union. I mean, even the ushers, they won't walk into the theater if there's a non-union cast on stage.
But why is everybody walking in out of town?
Because they've been able to negotiate these things into venues that are newly built and don't have a union contract in place before, or it's a right to work state where they don't have to have a union crew.
Now I know.
Yeah. But, you know, unions are much, much stronger in New York than they are, say, in Alabama, much stronger.
And on that note, I continue to hear just really, really bad reports from the Metropolitan Opera about that. So I don't know if everyone I talk to says you're going to see either a strike or a lockout.
Well, wow.
I'm really sorry to say that. But
yeah.
Yeah. With what's happened with City Opera in the last, 24 months.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about this San Diego Opera.
Yeah.
And what's happened with they went bankrupt and they reorganized and they got back together. They have this huge fundraiser. They're getting back up on their feet, but it's tough times in the funding for arts that are not big commercial hits like the Mamma Mia's.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to the 2014 Tony Awards, the 68th annual Tony Awards, I might add. They are next Sunday evening, 8 p.m. on CBS, for those of you at home that want to watch. But we are going to talk about what we think will win, maybe what we think should win, and go through, what Michael and Peter and I feel about what's going to happen next week, or maybe what we think should happen. So why don't we start in the category of the best performance of an actor in a leading role in a play? You have Sam Barnett, Bryan Cranston, Chris O'Dowd, Mark Rylance, and Tony Shalhoub. So, Peter, why don't you start with that category? Tell us what you think of it.
Well, first off, what I do think is that this year is the strangest year in a long time. I think that anything can happen in any category, and I'm even including Best Actor in a Musical, which seems to be a lock in everybody's opinion. But I have no idea whatsoever that next week when I'm watching the show, am I going to say, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. I really believe that anything here is entirely possible. So while we do hear that the smart money is on Bryan Cranston, we have to admit that Mark Rylance gave a dynamically different performance as Richard III. I'm sure a lot of people didn't quite like it, but nevertheless, it was markedly different from any Richard I've ever seen. And he certainly mesmerized me. Samuel Barnett was terrific as Viola in Twelfth Night, and that production was so spectacular. I mean, we cannot forget this. Chris O'Dowd is magnificent in Of Mice and Men, and I certainly like Tony Shalhoub in Act One, though I don't think that he had as much to do as other people, but he is a Broadway favorite, so I see a very competitive category here. A lot of people say it's not going to go to Mark Rylance because who wants to hear him give his strange speech again as acceptance? I mean, I guess it is going to go to Bryan Cranston since everybody's talking about it that way. But again, I'm not going to be surprised if somebody else gets it.
Michael, what do you think?
See, I think it's going to be Chris O'Dowd.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but again, I absolutely agree with what Peter said, and I think many people I've spoken to have the same feeling that there are very few clear winners, and it looks like the awards may really spread the wealth among several shows, which I think is a good thing.
You bet.
But we'll have to wait and see. And also, let me preface everything I say by saying, as I do every year, that I'm very bad at this. I mean, I can tell you what I obviously can tell you what I think should win, except in cases when I can't, because I can't decide. But as to what will win, it's so hard to know what other people are going to think, and it's also worth pointing out. Recently, there have been articles about the Tony nomination process, specifically focused on something we discussed, why The Bridges of Madison County did not also get nominated for Best Musical when they specifically said that there could be a fifth slot. And I think we, you know, read things and heard things maybe that we did or did not know before. It's because it really comes down to just an actual vote, you know, that people vote. And then if the fifth nominee, if the fifth show had gotten enough of those votes, then it would have been nominated also. But if it didn't, then they just don't nominate it and they don't discuss it. There's not an ability to say for somebody to say, hey, can we add Bridges of Madison County? Because it doesn't work that way. So if the nominations don't work that way, I mean, I really don't think that many of us think there's a conspiracy theory and that all these Tony voters, these 600, 700 people or whatever, get together in some hangar somewhere and discuss what, you know, who's going to get the Tony. I think they all vote on their own. And so, for that reason, it's very, very hard to say. But I think Chris O'Dowd, he's my guess as to who will get it. And I thought he was absolutely magnificent. So that would be a wonderful thing. Everyone in the category is worthy. Mark Rylance, it seemed to me, although I loved his Richard III, it seemed to me at the time that it was a very controversial performance. Mm-hmm. And he got the better reviews for his other role, mm-hmm, in Twelfth, mm-hmm, Night. Mm-hmm. So that's just one remark I'd make. But I think, yeah, I'm thinking Chris O'Dowd.
So I think that Bryan Cranston's going to walk away with it just because of so much Broadway love. Not that Chris O'Dowd doesn't get Broadway love right now, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, but it's just that Bryan Cranston's all the buzz right now. He's the fan of the insiders, and unfortunately. You know, we've talked about this over the years, but the shows that are closed, I think they're out of sight, out of mind. I think it's hard for 12th Night, Richard III to
Last
really
Nazareth.
get traction right now. And Peter has mentioned, Tony Shalhoub, is well loved, and I adore Tony Shalhoub, but he doesn't do a whole lot in Act One. So,
that's Act Two.
Yeah. But that set is beautiful. That
sure set is.
All right. So, best performance by an actress in a leading role, a play: Tyne Daly, LaTanya Richardson Jackson, Cherry Jones, Audra McDonald, and Estelle Parsons. Michael, take this one. Okay, Peter, take this one.
I think. I pick Cherry Jones, but I would think if it's not her, it'll probably be Audra McDonald. Mm-hmm.
I don't care that Audra has won so many times. I think this is her best performance ever, and I liked all the rest of her performances, but here's where she really extended herself. As Michael has mentioned, so many other people have mentioned, they never thought she could pull it off, and look what she did.
Yes.
So under those circumstances, I am actually hoping for Audra McDonald to win. But on the other hand, I was terrifically, I hate to use the expression blown away, but I'm going to, for LaTanya Richardson Jackson.
Yes.
I really adored her in the play. Sentimentally, I'd like to see Estelle Parsons get it, but I guess that really is a long shot. It's a disgrace that she hasn't won a Tony Award. So there's that too. I have to say, Cherry Jones, I thought, was terrific in The Glass Menagerie, but I didn't see anything different. A lot of people say they did. I did not see anything different.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people have. I went in there expecting to say, ooh, I've never thought of that line that way before. But it never happened for me.
Yeah.
So, and again, a perfectly wonderful performance. No question about it, but wasn't revelatory to me. So, if indeed Tyne Daly doesn't win, I think we're going to see a closing notice on Monday morning.
Okay.
So because that play has done terrible business, but nevertheless, I'm strangely hoping for Audra, not that she needs it, but she really is. See, now that's the thing, you know, where I say Cherry Jones wasn't revelatory for me. Audra McDonald was, so that's so that's my feeling on that.
Well, I think it's a testament to LaTanya Richardson Jackson that she just to get the nomination. You know, I mean, the whole story of her coming in at the last minute and giving such an
yeah.
I mean, everyone I know who sees that play is absolutely, mm-hmm, and I think most of them say blown away. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, everybody goes for Denzel, and yet who do they come out talking about?
Right.
You know, so that's impressive, too. And for those people who don't know where the Jackson comes from, that's kind of interesting, too.
Yes.
You know, she's married to Samuel L. So that's nice as well.
So I have many of the same feelings that the both of you have. I love LaTanya Richardson Jackson. I went in for Denzel and came out talking about her. Absolutely. I think it's amazing. And I was as blown away by Audra in Lady Day. And I think Audra's going to win it for this reason, is that Audra is campaigning. And LaTanya is not. And I think it's really... I think that every time you see, you know, Broadway.com or Broadway World or Theater Mania or any of the Playbill, any of the large websites that talk about the Tony Awards, they're talking about they have interviews with Audra and no interviews with LaTanya, and she's out of sight, out of mind. She's there 8 times a week, tearing it up in Raisin, and she's incredible, but not playing the Broadway game. I don't think she's going to win it.
Well, you know, Audra may very well feel that this is the one and only opportunity she will get to
play. In the leading role in a play.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, so she may feel, you know, I've got to really lobby for this. Now, of course, she has won in two play categories before, no question about that. That said, though, we do think of her as a musical performer first and always, and she's a musical performer here. I mean, you know,
yeah,
so,
it's shocking.
And, you know, it may very well work against her, people saying, you know, well, she doesn't belong in that category, therefore I'm not going to vote for her. See, this is what I mean. I just have no idea what's going to happen this year.
Yeah.
It really depends if Raisin gets on a roll. You know, it was like years ago when the producers won everything. It was like, you know, if the producers had been nominated for best carpeting in a theater, they would have won it.
Exactly.
Because it was like, everybody was like, oh my God, the producers. So it really depends if the rage over Raisin keeps going during this voting. But I also think that, they had the Tony Awards receptions for the out of town voters who came in, mm-hmm. and Audra was squeezing the palms and taking pictures and being great and everything, and we didn't see LaTanya anywhere. So and I also think that Lady Day at Emerson Bar and Grill will tour.
By the way, did you
very
see,
easily?
Did you read that they're going to record it live?
Yes,
two CDs, which is great news, except. In the sense that I was kind of hoping that they would do a video, you know,
yeah,
either for the Cinecast or PBS or whatever. And especially because Lonnie Price is involved and he's done several of those.
Oh, right.
I thought that might happen.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. So, as great it is as it is just vocally to hear her do that, you know, the whole package is really, and it really is a wonderful production, I think, in terms of the projections and the staging, the way the way the venue is set up, the playing space with the tables around, and I'm sure that if nothing else, they'll tape it for Lincoln Center Archives, and you can go watch it there if nothing else happens.
Mm-hmm. All right, best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical: Neil Patrick Harris, Ramin Karimloo, Andy Carl, Jefferson Mays, Bryce Pinkham. Peter?
I would like to see this go to Andy Carl because it's Rocky's best shot. It's really Rocky's only – I mean, there may be some technical categories that we'll get, of course, because everybody talks about that last 20 minutes. But Andy Carl is there for more than 20 minutes, and he's giving a really wonderful performance. I guess I have to go with the conventional wisdom that it's going to be Neil Patrick Harris if I had to really put my money on the line. But I would like to see an upset. Rocky Balboa does not upset the champion he's supposed to upset. Well, not supposed to, but would like to upset in the musical. But I would like to see Andy Carl pull off an upset here.
Michael?
Well, I would love to see Andy win it in terms of both his talent, which... it was evident to me quite some time ago, I guess the first time in Altar Boys, but also because, you know, the incredibly hard work that goes into this role, it's really just I can't imagine the fight scenes alone. But not only that, he's, you know, he's running across the stage. He's constantly, you know, from one scene to the next. And so in that respect, I think that would be great. But I think, and also for sentimental reasons, and I mean, this may be the last time I'll bring this up. I still cannot believe their marketing campaign with a huge close-up photo of two people who are not the stars of the show, including him and the woman who does not play Adrian. You know, and apparently it's on the cover of the cast album too. I haven't seen the actual album yet, but I've seen the image of it. I just that baffles me, and I think it's very disrespectful. And I wonder if his agents like even attempted to make an issue of it, or hers, you know. But maybe we'll find out someday. Maybe it'll play out.
This is the second consecutive show at the Winter Garden that's done that. When you think of it, because the lady in Mamma Mia was not in the cast either.
That is true. People have brought that, but to me, that image was so it was like pixelated, and it was the woman like had her face up, and she was like smiling. It was obvious that was not supposed to be an actual person in the way that this is. But I think actually this is probably one of the few clear categories, because I think as terrific as both Jefferson Mays and Bryce Pinkham are,
yes, they are.
I think, as someone else said, that they will quote unquote cancel each other out, though in a way, why should they, just because they're in the same show? But that does, I think we can agree that does happen
historically. It always seems to happen, really. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Virtually always. I guess one exception would be in Annie, when Dorothy Loudon and Andrea McArdle were both nominated in the same category, you know. But but nevertheless, your point is well taken. Traditionally, when there is more than one nominee in the category, it turns out to be a split vote.
I think Chorus Line was another exception, wasn't it?
Sure. Yeah. Good point.
But yes, it's still, I think it's fair to say. And as far as Ramin Karimloo, you know, I mean, he got great reviews and we all love him and it's great, but I just don't think there's as much buzz about him at this point. And also, he had injured himself and was out for a while. I don't know if that may have prevented some Tony voters from seeing him.
Yeah. Good point.
So, yeah, I mean, Andy Carl and Rocky, amazing, and Jefferson and Bryce, I think splitting the vote leads to Neil Patrick Harris winning this category. So, best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical: Mary Bridget Davies, A Night with Janis Joplin, we just sort of talked about for a second; Sutton Foster, Idina Menzel, Jesse Mueller, and Kelly O'Hara. So, Michael, why don't you start us here?
Jesse Mueller.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have a feeling she's so good. I mean, people have had a chance to see her be terrific in several things now, and very, very different in all of them, from On a Clear Day to Carousel at the Philharmonic to this, to Drood. What am I leaving out?
No, that's a very good point, Michael, that this does not remotely seem like the same woman who was in Clear Day.
No.
Not remotely.
No.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that she's going to win, too. Going back to see Beautiful, a show I enjoy immeasurably, but I was also very much aware that they're very lucky to have her, because that little self-deprecating laugh really helps that character along and makes you care about her. And she really becomes a symbol for all of us who are trying to get somewhere in life. And that's what's special about her performance. I don't think this is a lock. And to me, the most interesting thing would have been who would have been omitted had Audra been correctly put in this category. That would have been of more than moderate interest to me. And certainly, if then needs this award, It's their biggest hope. After all, the Violet is a different type of financial situation at the Roundabout Theater. It's not as important for them to win. I frankly think it should not be Sutton Foster because I don't see her having the most to do in that show. It seems to me everybody else has better material than she has. I'm not saying her material is bad. But what I am saying is the woos and the applause went to people like Joshua Henry and other people in the cast. So, but I'm rooting for Jesse Mueller, and I really do think it's the most logical choice to have it happen.
And yeah, again, and I didn't mean to imply that I thought it was a lock either. But
I know you didn't.
But I just that's my feeling.
Really,
that's my feeling.
Yeah. Lock is very hard this year.
So
locks have been picked.
We're going to go 3-for-3 on this. I think it's Jesse Mueller.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think that Mary Bridget Davies, I think, would have been the person out of the category if.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Before we leave the category, though, I did see the final performance of The Bridges of Madison County, and Kelly O'Hara. I mean, she does have the most glorious voice that. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say in the last 50 years, but I'm tempted to say something like that.
But, you know, here we go again. You know, this is exactly another reason why she could win, too, that, again, people may be just a little bit tired of her not winning. So, yeah, it could very well happen for that reason. It really could. Yeah.
I think that Kelly has a very hard time winning this category because I don't think all the Tony voters got to see her. I think that had everybody gotten to see Kelly and The Bridges of Madison County still been running, I think that this would have been a toss-up between Jesse and Kelly, because Kelly is well loved within the Broadway community, and that she's been up for it a number of times and hasn't gotten it. And interesting is that a change has happened in my household in the last. I would say 3 weeks or so, in that Frozen is getting less and less play in our stereo, and The Bridges of Madison County is getting more and more play in our stereo. And
is this just Daddy taking charge?
No, these are my wife and my kids.
Really?
My kids love singing The Bridges of Madison County stuff, and they love singing the Frozen stuff. But I think that if Bridges had stayed open and people had a chance to see it, I think Bridges would have been the big surprise next Sunday.
If they can sing the Bridges stuff, you better get them to voice teachers and agents.
Well, I didn't say they sang it well. You know, they're not singing like me. You know.
Okay. But, okay.
Well, that was. Pretty, We should edit that out.
Okay. We know it.
Best performance.
Chilies to come. You know, I was listening to my daddy's podcast and he had no confidence in me.
Excuse me. The best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play. Reed Birney, Paul Chahiti, Stephen Fry, Mark Rylance, and Brian J. Smith in The Glass Menagerie. So, Peter.
Well, Reed Birney, too, has this wonderful reputation around Broadway. Everybody adores Reed Birney, a nice, happy-go-lucky guy who is always glad to see you and all that goes with that. And his show is still running. Paul Chahiti was magnificent as Maria. Who notices Maria, you know, in Twelfth Night, but we had to. And here's Mark Rylance again, you know, one of the few times, comparatively speaking, that an actor gets nominated in both categories. But certainly I had no problem with his being nominated in this category as Olivia. Magnificent. But the one that everybody seemed to like even more was Stephen Fry as Malvolio. However, you know, while this is a featured role in a play, and while certainly Malvolio is a featured role, the surprise of Paul Chahiti really knocked me out. You know, I haven't mentioned Brian Smith, who certainly did an admirable job in The Glass Menagerie playing the gentleman caller. That is one long scene, after all. I think it's going to be Reed Birney, almost as a lifetime achievement type of award, and that's perfectly fine with me.
Michael, what do you think?
First of all, a question. Was Reed, was he not nominated for Picnic?
I think he was.
Yeah, I mean, that's in my head. I mean, certainly people have been, you know, many people really are great fans of his. And he got some, he had a New York Times profile not so long ago. Actually, I think it was at the time of Picnic.
I'm looking
right now. Reed Birney got this is his first Tony nomination.
Oh, okay. My mistake. Maybe it was Dramatist.
Mine too, though, but it's
on Broadway like... in Gemini and in Picnic, but it doesn't say he was nominated.
All right, my mistake. But he did. There was a New York Times profile, and I think people have in recent years. He's one of those people who had been doing, you know, really excellent work for years, and then suddenly, sometimes it happens, and it's kind of wonderful. People are like, you know, hey, this guy's really good, and we should pay more attention. And so he got his New York Times profile, and people have been talking. But and he's just great in the show. But I think it, you know, I think that I mean I don't. Like the play myself personally, so I think that might work against him. For Twelfth Night, I guess it's fairly uncommon to have three people nominated from the same show in one category. So if that canceling out thing is true, then that might apply even more so here. Yeah. And I do think I think and hope that it will be Brian J. Smith because I just thought he was it was a beautiful performance. His work with Celia Keenan-Bolger in that incredible scene, that long scene in Act Two of The Glass Menagerie. I think he's an up and comer. And sometimes the Tonys like to give awards to those type of people as well as the honored veterans. So that's my guess.
All right, I think it's going to be Reed Birney because it's still running and the 12th Night Triumvirate cancels each other out and that Casa Valentina might tour and that the rest of the out-of-town voters will be able to see him in this thing and he's very, very good in it.
You think Casa Valentina is going to tour?
Yeah.
All right.
It'll tour the big cities. It'll do Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah.
Things like that. Boston.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, things like that.
Just a footnote here. Reed Birney did an interview where he said this was his first time in drag. And when I saw him at the Drama Desk shindig, I said to him, excuse me, but I recall that Greek play you did at BU way back in the 70s. And he had to admit that that was true. He had forgot it. And I believe he did. It was a terrible show. Anyway, but I don't know if we can really consider that the same type of drag after all, you know, playing this in a Greek comedy. There was Unearth, you know, I don't even remember the name of it. Anyway, but he did fess up that, yes, indeed, this was not his first time after all. But and I hope I haven't cost him any votes by saying that.
And the Times regrets the error.
Right.
So, guys, if the Times hasn't had other things to think about in the last couple of weeks. All right, best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play. Sarah Green, Celia Keenan-Bolger. Who is going to vote for Celia? Michael or Peter? I'm not sure.
I don't think either of us are Tony voters.
So. Nope. Well, right now. Nah. Help me with Sophie's last name. Okonedo. I get that wrong. Sophie Okonedo in A Raisin, Anika Nani Rose in A Raisin, and Mary Winningham in Casa Valentina. So let's get it over with, Michael. Tell us who you're going to vote for here.
If I had a vote.
Yeah.
Celia Keenan-Bolger.
Peter, what do you think?
I agree with that. I think it's her turn. This may sound strange, but when she was in Spelling Bee, her castmate Dan Fogler won, and she did not. That may have nothing to do with anything, I'll grant you, but somehow I see it as something that will be considered. It's fine with me if she wins. I thought she was really quite lovely. And tomorrow night at the Theatre World Award, she's going to get the Dorothy Loudon Award. which is given out by the Dorothy Loudon Foundation. And, but boy, Mayor Winningham playing that very strange character, unlike any we have ever seen on stage, a wife who is supportive of what her husband is doing, you know, something that many wives would not be remotely supportive of doing, and yet has second thoughts by the time the play ends. It's a very, very interesting part, and she does it to perfection. So it's fine with me if she takes home the prize too.
I think all three of us in agreement here.
You think it's going to be Celia?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And I would love, not
she's
only,
a lovely lady too.
Not only do I think it's going to be her, I really wish it was her as well.
Yeah, a lovely, lovely human being, and really somebody who, and also somebody I should point out, who I know has mentored a lot of people, and therefore, not that any voter is going to know about this or take this in consideration. I'm just talking, while we're giving praise to the young woman, let's also give her praise for being a very good mentor, I'm told.
All right. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, Danny Burstein, Nick Cordero, Joshua Henry, James Monroe, Iglehart, and Jared Spector. So, Peter, go ahead.
Well, this sounds mean, but I'll say it anyway. I hope it's not Mr. Iglehart. I think he was perfectly decent in Aladdin. He does the role that he's given. He's fine. I don't see anything magnificent about him that so many people do. So I'm in the minority here, and a lot of people think he's going to win.
You may not be on the minority on this podcast, but we'll go. But
oh, really? We'll see. Danny Burstein has lost so many times, and his wife has too, for that matter, that this may be the time. I think he's really terrific in the show, and I like his new interpretation that I mentioned on one line when he's approached by Fraulein Kost, trying to get him to be her next customer. His reaction is unlike any Herr Schultz I've ever seen. So I think that's really quite good. Nick Cordero certainly made a big splash in Bullets Over Broadway. But boy, Joshua Henry really commanded the stage when he was on it in Violet. But I'm going to go with Danny. You know, I want that to happen, and I think it's going to happen.
Michael.
Yeah, I would say that in the case of both James Monroe Iglehart and Nick Cordero, and again, I want to be clear here. I think both of them do terrific jobs, and they do what is required and what is asked of them, and they do it very, very well. But I think in both of those cases, it's the nature of the role itself that has garnered a lot of attention, and as compared to, for example, the role in Violet, or the role in Cabaret. Or the role in Beautiful, where it's really more of what you make of it, and you bring your own thing to it, and add your talents to it. So I think for what that's worth, and you know, also, in the case of Aladdin, he it just seemed a lot of it seems so stereotypical. Mm-hmm. I knew how he was going to say or do something before he did it. And the other thing is that I didn't mention this, but when I saw the show, and I can't imagine it was just the night I saw it, mm-hmm. he got really winded about halfway through Friend Like Me, to the point where he was gasping.
Really?
He was gasping to try to get out the lyrics at the end and only doing like two syllables. And I thought, you know, I was literally a little concerned for him because he's a big guy. I mean,
yeah,
I would think doing that show 8 a week alone would maybe cause him to lose some weight. And that might actually be a really good thing. But there again, I think his size is part of this stereotypical kind of obvious way that they've cast the role when they decided that they weren't going to have somebody try to imitate Robin Williams, which would have been a disaster. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what I think. But Danny Burstein is always wonderful. I loved him, especially in this, because it's such a subtle performance. as opposed to some of the others. And that's, again, partly the way that it's directed, and also the way that the non-cabaret scenes are written as composed to the, as compared to the cabaret scenes. But I think he is very well loved in the industry, and this is one of his best performances, and I suspect and hope that he will win it.
All right, we're 3 for 3 on this one. I think you've hit all the other points on the other folks already, how wonderful everybody is in this category, but that Danny is so well loved, and that he's been shut out before, and that this performance is a is really outstanding. So I think that the perfect storm coming together is here, that Danny's going to get the trophy.
Mm.
All right, best performance by an actress in a featured role in a musical. Linda Emond, Lena Hall, Anika Larsson, Adrian Lennox, and Lauren Worsham. So, Michael.
Lena Hall in Hedwig and the Angry Inch. She just is amazing. And again, I said, I knew in the back of my head that she was going to be the drag character for most of the show, the male drag character, but I kind of forgot. And for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, I thought that that was a guy up there. And then, you know, at the end, she transforms utterly into this incredible glam rock diva and just brings the house down. And so it's that kind of a role to begin with that can be really showy. And if you do it right, it's people are going to just say, wow, wow, wow. Because anything that involves a transformation like that is, that can always be a big plus. But aside from all that, she's just amazing in it. And I think she's going to get it.
Peter.
The performances that impressed me most of these five were Anika Larsson and Linda Emond. Again, as a real cabaret veteran from its third performance in Boston in 1966, she did wonderful things with the role that I've never seen before. Anika Larsson, I thought, was just sensational as Cynthia Weil. I really enjoyed her. She was centered. She was real. So I liked that very much. But yes, I don't think it's impossible that Lena Hall's going to win because of the coattail effect, too. If Neil Patrick Harris really does do that well, he might very well take Lena Hall with him. So I think that's not impossible. Lauren Worsham is quite good in Gentleman's Guide. So is Lisa O'Hare, by the way. Not that she's nominated, but I'd like to give her a consolation prize of a mention here because I thought she was equally terrific. So I guess Adrian Lennox has the least chance because After Midnight is really an ensemble show. It's really split into like a pizza with 6 or 8 slices. it almost seems that way to me. So, I'd love to see Anika Larsson win.
Okay. So, this is a really hard category for me. I think that Lena Hall is going to win for what Michael has said already, and as far as what Peter has said, that I think that Hedwig is sort of in insider's rage right now, that everybody in the industry is trying to get in to see the show, and everybody is wants to, you know, get backstage and have their pictures taken with Neil and Lena and things like that, and I think that Lena's going to win it. Who deserves it? All five of them are just Linda Emond in Cabaret was amazing, and Lauren in Gentleman's, you know, and we had Anika on. We had Lena on as well. And so these are people that are well deserving. So let's move on to the next category. We'll go into the best direction of a play. Tim Carroll for Twelfth Night, Michael Grandage for The Cripple of Inishman, Kenny Leon for Raisin in the Sun, and John Tiffany in The Glass Menagerie. So, Peter, tell me what you think.
Well, you know, here's another category where we're talking about such anything could really happen. You know, The thing, Kenny Leon is a real theater veteran, and his work in Atlanta has certainly been heralded. So it may just be the time when he's going to get his recognition. Again, this might be more of a Lifetime Achievement Award. Some people may say, however, that Raisin in the Sun, and I don't mean this as literally as I sound, directs itself, that there's a template in place and everybody knows where he should be at a certain time. Of course, that's blocking. But even with the performances, we know what to expect from Raisin in the Sun. Again, I didn't think The Glass Menagerie was so revelatory, but a lot of people did. So John Tiffany is definitely a contender. I like Michael Grandage's direction of Cripple of the Inishman much more than I like the previous Atlantic production. So that's significant to me. But the one that most blew me away, Tim Carroll in Twelfth Night. So I'm rooting for him. I expect it's going to be John Tiffany, but I'm rooting for Tim Carroll.
All right. Michael, what do you think?
I'm not even going to guess who will win, I'm completely thrown in this category. I don't think it would be Michael Grandage or Grandage, however you say it. Just because, I think I've said before, I would disagree with Peter. I liked the Atlantic production overall.
Oh, a lot of people did.
Much better. Maybe it was partly because I went in cold, and I think it's the kind of play it's really good if you go in cold.
Sure.
Especially
cold
that
play.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that John Tiffany or Kenny Leon or Tim Carroll would all be deserving. I think probably also maybe it will be John Tiffany. There's a ringing prediction.
Well, I think next Sunday is going to be a mini run on the Raisin in the Sun, so I think Kenny Leon's going to win this one. All right, Best Direction of a Musical, Warren Carlyle, After Midnight, Michael Mayer, Hedwig in The Angry Inch, Lee Silverman for Violet, and Darko Trzecniak for Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. Michael, what do you think?
This is also hard, just from a not who will win but who should win category, because there's a lot of variables here. I didn't really like the direction of Violet. I love the direction of Hedwig, but I'm not sure how much one would say that's about the direction. I think there are a limited number of choices that can be made. I would think, because it's all pretty straightforward on the page. Although the rewrites, I have to say, were very well done. I don't know if Michael Mayer had a hand in those. Does anyone know?
Yeah. That's a good point.
I saw an interview with the Michael Mayer and Neil Patrick Harris and, I'm so blank on his name. Who was the original? Stephen Trask. Who's the original Hedwig? It was John Cameron Mitchell. The four of them were interviewed, and they talked about how all four of them had a hand in the rewrites and creating this new script.
Well, then, if that's true, then that's another plus in Michael Mayer's column, because I think it was very well done to the extent that he contributed to that. It's a really really well done in terms of the jokes and the rewrites and the fake playbill for Hurt Locker the musical, which a friend of mine was at a local restaurant that I hang out at the other night, and he was there and he came in with that, and there were these two out of town women there, and they're like, what's that? Because he was looking through the Hurt Locker playbill, but not rather than the Hedwig one.
It's very funny.
And he let them go on for several minutes before he told them that it was fake. And they were like, really? Oh, when is that? When is that? What is that?
Even better is, like, I saw it, I loved it.
And I don't know if either of you have had a chance to look through that fake playbill. It's hilarious. The shows you might have seen page, with all these ridiculous sounding things, and the bios for the cast, which includes Michael Cerveris and Bobby Cannavale. It's beyond hilarious.
Well, the ridiculous things that you wouldn't believe. Yeah, I also remember the movie of Avanti. They talk about a musical version of Titanic as an example of something that's really stupid. And, you know, that happens from time to time. You hear about these things. There's Wendy Wasserstein in Sisters Rosenzweig mentions a musical of The Scarlet Pimpernel as if that's a ridiculous thing. We certainly got to see that. So don't be surprised if what you're looking at on that page of strange, crazy, out of this mind future attractions is the Broadway season of 2021, you know, so it could very well be.
And apparently, and I'm hearing again, I'm still hearing that some people, when they hear about Rocky the Musical, they say, "You're kidding." And that may be why, as we've
also discussed, why
the commercials, et cetera, do not mention the word musical, which is it wise not to mention it because people will say you've got to be kidding, or is it better to mention it anyway just so they know they're going to see a musical? I would say the latter.
They should just absolutely not feature that song, "I Broke My Nose" or "I Haven't Broken My Nose" or
"My Nose Ain't Broke."
"My Nose Ain't Broke." So, Michael, I missed which Best Direction.
Did I say?
You might have said. I might have missed it.
No, I didn't. I think that. It will probably be Darko Tresnak because I think that show will win Best Musical.
I think they're going to be a runaway too there. All right, Peter, what do you think?
Absolutely, Darko Tresnak. It was the best direction of the season for me for a musical, and I was really so happy when the show ended. The first thing Linda did when she turned to me, she said, "Wow, what direction!" And I agree. I was so impressed by that as well. I also want to know who had the idea. Was it he? To have the stage upon the stage. That helps that show immeasurably because we are talking about, after all, murder. The idea of having one person play all the victims is very smart, too. The idea of having it be a British show, it was, of course, a British novel. But again, all these things remove you from the reality of people getting killed. You know what I mean? You know, they do make it funny, and I do think that stage upon the stage helps make it seem less real. And I don't know if that's his. But I just want to bring that up. But even if it were not, I do think that the pinpoint perfect direction that he gave that show should be recognized.
I agree completely, Peter. And it's so interesting because in the Book of Mormon, somebody gets shot dead on stage.
Yeah.
In the middle of a quote unquote musical comedy.
Sure.
And nobody seems to care. Mm-hmm. Because it's the Book of Mormon.
Right.
You know, it's like they could do anything in that show.
Yeah, they really could.
It got its momentum. People are here. It's sold out. You cannot get in. Things that would horrify people.
Absolutely.
In other shows, they just.
Well, I mean, most of South Park horrifies people, and South Park also has that running thing of they kill the same kid every single week. Kenny gets killed every week. So, I mean, there's a lot of overlap there. Maybe that's...
South Park really paved the way for this success. I dare say if there were no South Park, Book of Mormon would have had a tough time with that female circumcision thing, too. And
sex with the babies in order to prevent having AIDS, yeah.
Sure. Sure. I dare say it could not have happened without that TV series success.
All right. Best choreography, Warren Carlyle, After Midnight, Stephen Hoggett and Kelly Devine on Rocky, Casey Nicholaw on Aladdin, and Susan Stroman in Bullets Over Broadway. Peter, what do you think about this?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Susan Stroman because she certainly won many times, and so they're not going to give it to her. Casey Nicholaw could very well win simply because of that Friend Like Me number, which everybody is crazy for. So that alone may give him the prize. It's entirely possible. On the other hand, they got to give After Midnight something. I mean, this is a real surprise. Nobody expected the show to be running on June 1st. It was one of these city center things that decided to move, and many of us wouldn't have been surprised if it closed after 2 weeks. I certainly wouldn't have been. So this might be a way of doing it. And certainly it's a dance-heavy show, to say the least. Rocky's choreography, I have a feeling that has much more to do with the fight. Are these the people who did the fight? If so, this may be the chance for people to reward Rocky for what everybody talks about Rocky. I think it's a better show than just that last 20 minutes. But nevertheless, people talk about that last 20 minutes more than anything else. So here's, if that's what they did, if that's the choreography, then it may very well go to them. But again, another wide open category.
All right. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, but the fact that you are, Peter, are confused about whether that the choreography includes the fight may mean that other people are too. So that,
yeah,
that,
but on the other hand, if you're a Tony voter, I think you might look into that. I mean, I just haven't bought.
Hopefully, it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, it was not in my purview. So, but true. Yes, hopefully, indeed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Casey may get it because of the Friend Like Me number and the show in general, and also again someone who's done amazing things, including Book of Mormon and several other amazing things. So he may they may want to reward him at this point. It is worth noting, without getting into it, that there's been some. There's been some talk recently about how not all of the choreography in After Midnight was done by Warren Carlin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it is not uncommon for choreographers to have assistants, quote unquote, and to use at least the basics of what those people come up with. One of the most famous examples is that Gower Champion was not a tapper. Or a tap choreographer. So he did not actually come up with tap steps for 42nd Street, which that's probably the most interesting example, because I think when people think of that show, one of the first things that comes to mind is, you know, the tapping.
So let's mention Randy Skinner's name. You know,
yes, Randy Skinner. Randy Skinner did a lot of it. And I'm sorry, a woman whose name I don't remember. Apparently they was also involved with that. So that's fine if it's not as if Warren Carlyle is the only person who has assistants. But on the other hand, it does make it more complicated when you have, I don't think Susan Stroman has other people coming up with steps for her. I could be wrong about that. So in a way it's, you're comparing someone who does everything to someone who does only parts of a show, and that gets a little more complicated too. So I just wanted to mention that, and I think it will be probably Casey.
On that issue, by the way, I'm also reminded of when Chita Rivera did her one woman show, and the way she said, and Peter Gennaro did those two numbers. The way she said it, and that look in her eyes of say, "Don't anybody tell me that this isn't 100% accurate. I was there. I know. And believe me, Peter Gennaro deserves more credit than he's been given." So it's the same. It's still the same old story.
Thank you, because that's maybe an even more famous example. And all of the dancers involved with West Side Story have always said that it seems that any number that involved women was done by Peter Gennaro. So that's the dance at the gym, America.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I had never heard that, by the way.
That's the way it was put to me. It was so primarily Robbins was the entire opening, which is of course amazing. And the rumble. A few other things.
Sure.
I guess.
Tonight sequence, the opening sequence, the Krupke numbers, or the men's numbers.
Right. Yeah. Krupke. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think it's going to be Casey Nikolaw for Aladdin, because I think they would like to give Aladdin a prize, and they'd like to give Casey a prize, and he's well loved in the community, and that You Ain't Never Had a Friend Like Me has to be one of their numbers that's going to be on the Tony telecast. I don't know that it is, but if they want to sell the show, they have to use that number.
By the way, you know, it really is too bad in my mind that they weren't able to continue calling After Midnight Cotton Club Parade.
Yeah.
It's what it was called at City Center.
City Center, yeah.
I do think that the title, because it doesn't tell you anything, I think it has hurt the show. And honestly, I'm trying to figure out why the Cotton Club, whoever owns the rights to that, why did they think that it wouldn't it have been only a huge plus for them to,
my experience with this stuff is that somebody at the Cotton Club either has something else in the works that's similar, or they asked for too much money and the production said no, and the person said, you can't sell your show without us, and they held tight, and they're out now. And so it's bad for everybody instead of being good for everybody.
That's too bad.
Well, we're talking about this type of thing. I also think that the lettering of the words After Midnight
terrible.
Oh, you think so too? Yeah,
one of the worst logos on Broadway this year.
They've really done well considering they had to fight that too. So, and I will admit that this may be simply what do I know about graphics? But that is the way that it hit me. So
yeah, it's hard to read. Right.
It is.
Best orchestrations. Let's try to get through this. We're running really, just like the Tonys themselves, we're running very late. We're going to get played off stage. So the best orchestrations, the orchestra is going to play us off. Doug Besterman for Bullets Over Broadway. Jason Robert Brown, The Bridges of Madison County. Steve Sidwell, Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And Jonathan Tunick, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. So Peter, tell us what you think.
I am one of the world's biggest Doug Besterman fans. He's so smart. And one of the things that I think was really smart in 1996 with Big, when the song Fun had to happen, that's the famous one involving the keyboard, that he made it a Dixieland sound because that's the most fun type of music there is. Doug's won, though. I think a lot of people feel bad that Bridges of Madison County didn't do better and feel that it's a quality work. So I think it's going to go to Jason Robert Brown.
Michael?
I was going to say almost exactly those two same things. So I agree that, yes, but it could be either. It could be either. Now, we haven't picked best score, have we?
Not yet.
Yeah, okay.
No. So I don't think there is a bigger Jason Robert Brown fan than me.
And your family.
And my family, and Kelly and Steven, and, I adored the show, and I love it. I think it's going to win Best Orchestration, and I'm sad it's closed. So should we go to into the Best Play, or do we want to do the original score?
Yeah.
Let's do the original score.
Let's do score.
All right.
And Best Play and Musical, and leave it at that.
Okay.
We can leave out the revivals, I guess.
Oh, I
those were the best things.
We have to do revivals. Yes.
Best Original Score, Music and Lyrics Written for the Theater, Aladdin, The Bridges of Madison County, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, and If Then. So, Peter.
Well, this is a prize that I think will go to Gentleman's Guide, partly because it is a totally original score. I do think there's a lot of wonderful material that Alan Menken has come up with for Aladdin, but a lot of it he came up with before. So I think that's part of the problem why that won't win. Of course, we do have another original score there too, and that's If Then, where... looking at the lyrics, the CD has just come out, and looking at the lyrics, Brian Yawkey really is a poet. There were so many, that's often said about Oscar Hammerstein, but there is a touch of the poet in Brian Yawkey too. So, so that original score helps there as well. But isn't the smart money on Jason Robert Brown? If I endorsed him for orchestrations, I guess I have to endorse him for the best original score too, thinking that people really feel bad that it closed. And of course, it's quality work. I mean, it certainly is quality work. So, yeah, I go back and forth on this, and but there are times I think there are an awful lot of eight notes in Gentleman's Guide, and a lot of the songs do have that patter feeling. So I guess it's going to go to Jason Robert Brown.
Michael?
Yeah, I think so, too. And it will be interesting to see what happens next season, because presumably, with any luck, Honeymoon in Vegas will come in, and that's a terrific score, but completely different.
Completely different.
Much more,
musical,
I guess,
comedy.
Yeah, musical comedy, and also, I guess, pastiche.
Yes.
A lot of it of, sure, like Vegas type, jazzy, croony kind of stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, but I think Jason will get it, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful score for Bridges.
Okay, I'm going to say some Latin here. I'm going to abid. So
I know what you mean.
All right. So we'll go into the best play category. Best play consists, the nominees are Act One, All the Way, Casa Valentina, and Mothers and Sons. So, Peter, tell us what you think.
Michael's going to hate me, but of these...
You left one out, James.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Outside Mullingar. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I
How interesting. Yeah. Freud says there are no accidents.
Yes.
did you mention Mothers and Sons?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Michael's going to hate me, but of all these, the one that I found the most satisfying was Casa Valentina. It covered all the bases for me. It's not going to win, but nevertheless, if that were to pull it out, I would be extraordinarily happy. Act One really redeemed itself to me with the final curtain and the final line. I think it's a very hard assignment to show people working on a play. It's inherently non-dramatic for anybody sitting in the audience, so I think that's really tough. All the Way, I thought, was a very fine script. It didn't overwhelm me. It didn't make me if somebody said to me, okay, name the 500 favorite plays you've seen in your life, it would take me a long time to get to All the Way. Mothers and Sons, I thought, was very skillful as well. Outside Mullingar, I have virtually no memory of. I can see what it looks like. I remember the people on the stage, but for the life of me, I can't remember very much more about it, I'm sorry to say. So, but the smart money's on All the Way, so I guess that's the answer. And yet, we know it's closing soon, so who knows if that's going to have any part of it. But it might have the coattail effect with Bryan Cranston, too, that it may win for that reason. But I'm rooting for that Casa Valentina play.
All right. Michael.
Well, first of all, I don't hate you, Peter.
You've always got along, Michael.
You don't hate him for that.
No.
I can use in a play. We got to use that in a play. I don't hate you for
that. Right.
I could never hate anyone whose favorite musical is She Loves Me.
Which version, though?
I think it's All the Way a clear winner in a very weak field, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
I think Casa Valentina certainly had many good moments, a lot of them provided by the cast. But then, you know, Harvey Fierstein would suddenly do something like completely, totally melodramatic and not, you know, accordant to the way that any human being would ever act. And that happens several times during it. And then there are the soapbox speeches and he would keep losing me every time he had gained me back. So that's unfortunate. Mothers and Sons, also incredibly interesting and well, subject matter, well worth exploration, the legacy of the AIDS crisis and how the strides that have been made in recent years in terms of gay marriage and gay parenthood, but just not real well written at all. Outside Mullingar, I think we may have mentioned this before. I think I had heard that it started out as a very short one act that basically consisted of only the final scene of what we saw on Broadway, which everyone, it seemed like everyone really enjoyed that long final scene between Deborah Messing and Brienne O'Byrne. But everything before that just kind of seemed like set up and filler and, you know, regardless of how good the acting was. So I think that's out. And Act One, as beloved as the novel is and as inherent as the subject, inherently interesting as the subject matter is to those of us in the theater, I just did not think it was well constructed and well written at all. So All the Way, I think. And the only problem with that show, I felt, is that it was a little too long, could have been edited down and maybe not had quite so large a scope. But I certainly enjoyed it while it was happening and found it very interesting throughout.
I wanted to point out something, and then I realized that it might not have, we might not have said this on the broadcast or in public or something like that. This is what happens when we talk so often. I don't know what we did.
Yeah, but, I know. I agree. Yeah.
But Peter said that, and I don't remember where it was, that all this year's best plays are going to end up at all the regions next year. All the regional theaters are going to be doing them next year, which I think is all true with all five of these plays. They're just all wonderful.
Although, with that,
in a Mullingar production announced somewhere. I forget where, but already I've seen one listed.
Michael, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, although I think almost all of them are going to have challenges in productions regionally, except maybe for outside Mullingar. I mean, Mothers and Sons, they're going to have to really choose their cities. And also Casa Valentina. And in terms of Act One, I mean, there's going to have to be major decisions made as to how to handle it in terms of the sets. I mean, on Broadway, as James mentioned earlier, there's this incredible revolving
set. They could do Act One in a black box. I think that set is amazing and gorgeous. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, I hope he wins.
So my choice for best play, this is the first time that all three of us are going to split. I'm going for Act One.
Uh-huh.
And as I said, I loved all of these shows, so we'll have to see what happens next Sunday. So best musical, we're up to so the nominees are After Midnight, Aladdin, Beautiful, and A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. So, Michael, why don't you start us off with this?
I feel that the winner will be and should be A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. Although, with After Midnight, it's an apples and oranges kind of situation, because After Midnight is terrific, but comparing a review to a book musical is just a little weird. But yes, Gentleman's Guide, which I hear, I don't know if you all know this, and again, I almost never check the grosses because I just never got into the habit. But I've been hearing from very reliable sources that it has been completely selling out basically since
the
nominations.
Yes, indeed.
Someone said the audience now has, I mean, the way they phrase it is the audience now has permission to come and see the show and buy tickets. I don't know if I'd say permission so much.
No.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fantastic, and I hope it does win, because I think it needs it to keep the momentum. Whereas Beautiful, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Thoroughly enjoyed along with Peter, I think doesn't need it so much. It's been doing very well, I think, since early on. And certainly Aladdin doesn't need it, God knows. After Midnight would, quote unquote, need it, I think. But I wouldn't give it. I don't think it should get the Best Musical Award.
So it just to answer your comment about the grosses and the ticket potential and things like that, is that last week they had their best week.
Gentleman's Guide?
Gentleman's Guide since December 29th. Their best week was last week, and they sold $720,000 worth of tickets. Mm-hmm. That's like three performances of Wicked. So, so while it is hard to get a ticket now to Gentleman's Guide, we'll have to see. I think it is caught on like wildfire, and I think that the advertising agency Spotco that's handling Gentleman's Guide is doing really wonderful things ever since they got the nomination. So the nominations were, Peter, tell me, they're April 29th or something like that?
Yeah.
So April 27th gross was $470,000 with a 53% gross potential. They got the nomination, and they went from selling 53% of tickets to 93% of tickets.
Wow.
And they went from $470,000 to $580,000, only $110,000 bump. So,
well, it's funny. I was writing about Rigantino, the Italian musical from 1962 that appeared on Broadway in 64 and only lasted 3 weeks. The press materials, by the way, make it sound like it was always meant to be a limited engagement of 3 weeks. No, it was not. It was supposed to run now and forever. But anyway, my point is, I was writing about the producer, who was Alexander H. Cohen, and I pointed out that this man was the most successful, unsuccessful producer that Broadway had, because his shows rarely paid back. Even if they were one-person shows, it was hard for them to pay back, and investors didn't make much money from him. However, However, notice what's happening with, you say, Gentleman's Guide is doing business now because of those Tony nominations. Yes, of course. But the reason people know that there's such a thing as the Tonys has to do with Alexander H. Cohen, who got them on national TV. And yes, that debt has really changed the business. Some will say for worse, and I understand that point of view too. But there is no question that Alexander Cohen, by putting the Tonys on TV, changed the complexion of Broadway.
Mm. Yep.
So, Peter, the best musical after Midnight, Aladdin, Beautiful, or Gentleman's Guide, where are you standing on that?
This one I feel more secure of than many in saying Beautiful. I know exactly what Michael means about the original property, and I always take my hat off to that. But the thing you mentioned a few minutes ago, the road voters.
The road voters.
I think we're going to tip it in Beautiful's favor, because it's going to be very hard to sell Gentleman's Guide in the provinces. Very hard. It's not going to be hard to sell Beautiful at all. So so I do think this is a business decision more than anything else that will make Beautiful win the prize.
I totally agree with you. That's exactly what I was going to say. Peter, you're channeling me.
There's a lot of this. I mean, you know, how could it not be? You know, we of course talk so often. You know, we certainly pay attention to what's going on. Of course, we're going to reflect each other's feelings.
But then there is the counter argument that, again, first of all, as I said before, people don't theoretically. I mean, first of all, people don't get together in a room and like, you know, say, let's, what are we going to give it to? But also,
I think some Tony voters do. Voters absolutely do.
But also the argument could be that Beautiful, someone could say to themselves, well, Beautiful is going to do great on tour anyway. Mm-hmm. So if I vote for Gentleman's Guide, then maybe we'll have two shows that do great on tour.
Gentleman's Guide is not going to do well on tour. It's a very special show. It's a very hard show to tie into if you don't go to the theater that much. Mm. And people out of town who have the subscription series, that type of thing, are not used to seeing something that looks like Gentleman's Guide. I also think it's an off-putting title in a strange way. I applaud them for not doing whatever the name of the novel was, colon, the musical. it's a tough show for out-of-towners, I think.
I see what you're saying, but I absolutely agree to that extent. But on the other hand, this huge uptick at the box office, a lot of those people have got to be out-of-towners.
Yeah, so, they're here for a limited amount of time, and they hear it's good, and so they'll take a chance with it. When it's coming to your city, you know, I even think the Best Musical Prize is going to help. I have a feeling there have been plenty of Best Musical winners that have toured that have disappointed a lot of people. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that were the case. So I can't imagine Gentleman's Guide doing well on tour. And by the way, none of this has anything to do with my feelings for the show, which I am a great admirer of it. I had as good a time the second time seeing it as I did the first. It is a terrific piece of material. I just don't see it playing in Peoria.
That would be, I think, a quintessential example of a show that would really be helped by having a star in it, if they could find someone who could do either of those roles.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are some people. You know?
Yeah, and really, I mean, that is a wonderful challenge. I don't think it's impossible they could get somebody more famous than who they have on Broadway, because it is something that is delicious to play.
Yes.
Hugh Laurie. I want Hugh Laurie to come to Broadway doing something.
Yes, I know you do.
All righty. So, best revival of a play. The Cripple of Inishman, The Glass Menagerie, A Raisin in the Sun, and Twelfth Night. So, Peter, take this.
I want Twelfth Night to win, but I know it's going to be The Glass Menagerie.
You think so? Okay. Michael?
I want The Glass Menagerie to win, and I think it will win, although Twelfth Night was just really, really, really well done. Both of those shows were fantastic.
I think it's going to be Raisin.
Uh-huh.
I think
wouldn't be surprised.
Neither.
I think it's going to be Raisin.
Me either.
With Glass Menagerie, which was an outstanding production, and I adored it, not being open right now, and Twelfth Night not being open, and Raisin having Denzel and all this hotness in it, around it, and Cripple of Inishman being okay. I didn't think it was great. So, best revival of a musical, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, Les Miserables, and Violet. I'm going to take this one.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say it's going to be Hedwig, because I'm going to go way out on a limb there, aren't I now? If you had $1 million and one thing to bet on, what would it be?
Yeah.
Peter, so what do you think?
I'm not as convinced as you are. I'm not. I'm expecting Hedwig to win, but I don't think it's impossible Violet could pull it out. The only one that has no chance is Les Mis. Not a chance in the world.
Okay.
By the way, it's a very good production. That's not my point. You know,
no, absolutely.
It's just that Les Mis, the ship has sailed on giving awards to that show.
I think the whole Miss Saigon thing will be next year. Cameron will be able to come up on stage and take a bow.
Good reviews over there in London, especially for Eva Noblezada, the 18-year-old girl who lost the Jimmy Awards last year, and yet Tara Rubin said to her, I think you could be good for the revival of Miss Saigon, and her reviews have been raves.
We love Tara Rubin, the casting director. We have to get her on over the summer.
That's a nice idea. Yeah.
To get Tara on.
Great to have a casting director.
Yeah. Sure.
Allison Frank introduced me to Tara way back at Johnson Liff. Tara's amazing. So
just so quickly, I think it will be Hedwig also. I don't think that's going out on a limb. I enjoy the production of Les Mis, but I just love what you said about that. And Violet, I actually didn't think it was that great a production. And also, isn't it for what it's worth, it's limited run, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So we've gotten through most of them.
And we're going to
wrap it up here. I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link. That way, each and every time we have an episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. If you want to listen to us in another way, you can listen to us on the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device. And get us streamed to you. Broadway World plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Contact information for Peter, Michael, and me can be found at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as links to some of the things that we've talked about today and the list of our predictions. So we are not going to be with you next Sunday. We're going to come back to you next Monday night. We're going to record. So look for us on Tuesday morning, Monday morning. You'll have your Tony hangover and hang around the water cooler and talk about what the upsets and surprises were. And so we're going to do that on Monday night, and we'll come to you on Tuesday. So on behalf of Peter Felicia and Michael Portantier, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radios This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All
that's ahead and all that's behind, it's all in the moment I make up my mind and open my heart.